Welcome to Sex with Simmery. Frank, occasionally explicit edutainment on the most important topic of all. Sex with Simmery is not intended for children and is not safe for work unless your boss is particularly awesome. See more at sexwithsimmery.com.
Hey, friends and family of Sex with Simmery. We are so grateful to have your listenership. We have the coolest fans in the world. It's pretty much the best. And we hope that the love is mutual. If you are interested in supporting the Sex with Simmery media, either the website, the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/sexwithsimmery and become a supporter. For as little as $1 a month, you can be a regular supporter and continue to bring independent media that provides the kind of information that you want to have out in the world. Over here at Sex with Simmery, we have been doing this stuff for years. As you've noticed, we've got over 200 episodes. The Sex with Simmery website has been up since 2008. We've been giving you the goods for absolutely no cost, and we will continue to do so as long as we can. So thank you so much for your listenership, and we do hope that you will check it out. Patreon.com/sexwithsimmery. Welcome to Sex with Simmery. This is Dr. Simmery, and I am very excited to introduce you to today's guest. This is Judy Walker, and she is the development manager for the Women's Medical Fund, and I am so excited that you're here with us. Thanks for joining, Judy.
Oh, it is my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
So the Women's Medical Fund, in general, I'm a huge fan. I think that your work's incredibly important, and it's been too long. We haven't had you on. We're over 200 episodes, and you haven't been on yet. So if somebody's not familiar, what does the Women's Medical Fund do?
The Women's Medical Fund is an abortion access fund, and that means we help low-income people in southeastern Pennsylvania have access to safe abortion care. In the state of Pennsylvania, some people are not aware of the fact that Medicaid does not cover abortion. So if you rely upon Medicaid for your health care, which a good number of people do, and you find yourself pregnant and decide that having an abortion is the best decision for you, your insurance does not cover the procedure. A first trimester abortion in Pennsylvania locally, here in the Philadelphia area, can run between $350 and $450, and that's a lot of money to pay out of pocket. If your yearly income is $5,000, it's pretty much impossible. So what we do is provide emergency financial assistance to people who go to a provider, find out the cost. They're usually sometimes given a sliding fee scale, but if there's still a big gap, providers refer patients to us to try to help with funding. So we get calls from people every day. We have a helpline that people in need call, and our phone counselors speak with people, provide direct services in the form of information, referrals. So the bottom line is, if a woman calls and says, gosh, I only have $100 and I need to come up with another $150, our phone counselors will speak with people and help them figure out safe ways to raise some money. You know, we don't want to see people selling food stamps or not buying diapers for their babies or putting themselves or their families in danger. And what we try to do then is close the final gap. We help people think about, you know, do you have an aunt you could borrow $10 from? And sometimes people will say, oh, you know, I can't tell anybody what it's for. We might say, well, gee, you know, maybe if you just ask for a small amount of money, you wouldn't have to explain what it's for. Mm-hmm. So that we try to whittle that gap down to the as small as possible. And then we try to close that gap so that we will assist with whatever amount of money is left.
I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear that this even is a thing. Well, first of all, there's a pretty significant portion of Americans who are under the impression that, like, abortions are just free and that, like, all these things are paying for it. And as all of the stuff's going on with Planned Parenthood, there's this impression that it's, like, tax dollars are going to this stuff and not understanding that folks who absolutely can't afford to have another kid can't even afford the abortion. Like, so this is tremendously important. Like, and how many people are aware of the Women's Medical Fund before they end up in the situation where they need you?
Not all that many. And in fact, most people who call us are referred by abortion providers. So we have relationships with high quality providers in the Philadelphia region and some in South Jersey. So it's those folks who will then say to folks, oh, call Women's Medical Fund. They can probably help you out. And it's true. States decide individually whether or not Medicaid funds can be used to cover abortion. New Jersey, Medicaid does cover abortion. Pennsylvania, that's not the case. And some people call us are just uninsured. Some people have health plans that don't cover insurance that don't cover abortion, rather. So it's really quite a mix. And as you said, people who call us for help are typically really struggling to get by. 70% of the people who call us already have children, one or more children at home. So people, these are tough times, and to come up with that kind of cash can really be a huge problem. So we just believe that everybody should be able to access safe abortion care as part of the continuum of reproductive health care, that it should not matter what your zip code is or how much money is in your bank account. Everybody deserves high-quality health care.
This is a really good point. Previously, we had on a guest, Eric Berkowitz, who is a legal scholar, and he writes specifically around the history of laws that relate to sexuality. And one of the things he talks about is the regressive nature of what's happening in abortion legislation in general right now, that like it's getting harder and harder and harder, despite the fact that Roe v. Wade was supposed to take care of this. And at this point, he's basically acknowledging that like if you're wealthy, it'll probably always be something you can access. But it's getting harder and harder and harder for poor people, which is just increasing the likelihood that it'll be another generation of people who are poor. So I see this very much as like a social justice rights, long-term economic issue.
Absolutely. When the Hyde Amendment, that's the legislation, the federal legislation that bans abortion or Medicaid funding for abortion. It's named after a Congressman, Henry Hyde. And when that legislation passed in 1976, he's quoted as saying something along the lines of, you know, I can't control all women, but I can control low-income women and how money is distributed to them. So they absolutely saw it from the get-go as a way to discriminate against lower-income people. It's absolutely the case. The Medicaid laws were passed in Pennsylvania in 1985, and that's when we consider the promise of Roe v. Wade was broken in this state, and activists came together to form Women's Medical Fund way back then. So we're entering our 31st year of helping women. We've been around for a long time and have helped over more than 22,000 people.
So what is your particular draw to be a part of this? Like you mentioned before we started recording, you've been with the Women's Medical Fund for 7 years.
Yeah.
What got you invested in this?
Well, I've always been pro-choice. Grew up in the 70s, and at a time when abortion was legal, and was already legal, and I have always been pro-choice, always been a feminist. I actually worked with a Planned Parenthood in Trenton, New Jersey in the early 90s, and have had a long career in the nonprofit world, and came to Women's Medical Fund 7 years ago, and have been really happy working with this wonderful group of people. It's a wonderful group of supporters. It's an amazing, and it's an amazing, amazing group of people. We don't get any, obviously don't get any government money. We don't really get any corporate sponsorship. And our supporters are primarily individuals, some small family foundations, and a few businesses can support us with in-kind help. And for example, Lux Home is hosting our big special event coming up. So we do get support from local businesses who share these kind of values. But it's just a fabulous group of really committed individuals, and it's a pleasure to work with them.
So one of the fundraisers you have coming up where individuals can contribute is the One Night Only, which is Friday, October 30th. Can you talk a little bit about what's going to happen?
Yeah, One Night Only is actually a huge party. We like to say that it's Philly's most fabulous party in support of abortion access. It's an event that we have done every year for the past 9 years in the fall. And there's not a lot of program in it. It's not where we sit down and listen to a speaker. People come and have wonderful cocktails and delicious food. And we have amazing dance music. Our DJ is DJ Abby Klein. And we do it in the setting of Lux Home, a wonderful upscale furniture store right in Midtown that opens all three floors to our guests. And it's just an amazing party. A couple of years ago, we added a VIP component to the event. We would have a speaker come before the actual party started. Folks pay a little bit more money for their ticket and come and sit on the third floor and have champagne and special hors d'oeuvres and an opportunity to engage with our VIP speaker in a more intimate setting. This year, we are thrilled to welcome Liz Winstead, who's the co-creator of The Daily Show, co-founder of Air America, and the founder of Lady Parts Justice. She's an incredible, fierce, funny feminist, and we are so excited to welcome her to the event this year. So one night only. Again, it's all about food, fun, dancing. It's wonderful camaraderie. The event this year is around Halloween, so we're telling people that costumes are welcome, but by no means required or even expected. We have wonderful raffle prizes that we give out. So in contrast to our spring event, where it's more of an educational nature, we honor folks and, you know, we do some more advocacy networking. One night only is just pure fun. If I can tell you a little bit about how it came about, the person who's our main facilitator was at a pro-choice event in Philadelphia 10 years ago or so, and looked around. It was like, wow, it's a bunch of middle-aged women in this room. We have to do something to get younger folks involved, more involved in this movement. And I think we've seen a lot of growth in the past decade in general, as young feminists are coming forward and really carrying their banner to whole new places. And we're seeing some terrific work on the part of younger activists, reproductive justice activists, who are really expanding, you know, the intersections of economics and race and class and certainly reproductive rights. But our main host had the idea to put together a mixed generation committee and to have dual ticketing prices to make it possible for young people to come out. So, you know, we've got a lot of new supporters from this event. People come, have a great time, and, you know, it gives us an opportunity to then say, hey, you've been to One Night Only, now come and learn some more about abortion access. It really is an important issue.
That's a huge point. I'm really glad to hear that there's this, like, new generation rolling in, because I've become sort of despondent at the lack of concern that I've seen among younger and younger and younger people. And I talk to people in their late teens, early 20s, who seem to, for lack of a better term, just like take it so for granted that they don't think they need to have even opinions on this stuff, much less be mobilized to sort of stave off this like death by a thousand paper cuts that's happening to abortion rights. And I'm really glad to hear that that's not a universal thing, that there's still folks coming up.
I think it's so exciting, and it gives me so much hope for the future, because the young women that I see involved, granted, folks who are involved with Women's Medical Fund are going to be pro-choice from the outset, but we see young activists who are savvy, who are coming up with new strategies and new ways to talk about these kinds of basic rights that are really inspiring and exciting. I feel a lot of hope for the future. For example, one thing that we're part of a national coalition called All Above All, and this coalition is trying to take a proactive approach to legislation. Something was introduced this summer called the Each Woman Act, and this act would basically overturn the Hyde Amendment that would restore Medicaid funding, and it would keep governments from banning private insurance companies from banning abortion coverage. This was sort of spearheaded by these younger activists. They got it, did all the groundwork. It already has over 100 co-sponsors. I mean, can you imagine what it takes for a congressperson to come out and say, oh, I believe government funds should be spent on abortion? I mean, that takes some courage. So they've already made some great strides forward and getting this legislation through. And, you know, we're working hard. We're saying, that's it. We're tired of being on the defense. We're going to go on the offensive here. This is the right thing. People have the right to make the decision that is best for them without interference from politicians. And we believe the majority of Americans, the vast majority of Americans, agree with that. That nobody can put yourself in someone else's shoes, you know, until you've walked in their shoes, that people have the right to make the decision best for them and their families. So we are, you know, we're taking the offense to make sure that that has become a reality. A lot of these initiatives were conceived of and led by some, you know, younger activists who are great with social media, and we're hopeful. So if your listeners are feeling sort of isolated, come and join us. Come get involved with Women's Medical Fund. We do have a lot of younger supporters. We do events. We've done burlesque events. You know, we do our bowl-a-thon. We do things that, you know, attract a really diverse group of supporters. And the camaraderie is fantastic.
I'm just so enthused by this. And so, for instance, the last few weeks, there's been a lot of activism regarding changing the narrative around abortion and the hashtag Shout Your Abortion, which I'm not sure how far that got, like how many people were exposed to that hashtag. But the idea was that since 1 in 3 women at some point needs abortion care, that like clearly we're not talking openly about this, because we make it sound like it's this very rare thing. And in reality, like, it affects a lot of people who just like don't feel empowered to talk about it, because there's just lots of folks just ready to shame them, who are more than happy to, from their place of not currently needing that, to have like a lot of fucking opinions. And so there's a lot of folks who use the hashtag Shout Your Abortion to talk about, like, they were, you know, they're just way too young. They were not in any position to take care of that child, and for whatever reason, also not in a position to go with other options as well. And one friend, for instance, she was posting about how if she had not had access to abortion care when she did, not only would she be forever tied to an incredibly abusive ex, but she would not today have any of the things that she currently has: her education, her current family, or like the choices to live where she wants to live, to take jobs that she wants to take, you know, those sort of things. And this is such like an integral part of making sure that women have autonomy. Because pregnancy doesn't necessarily change everyone's life the same way. And it really is the sort of thing that can set a woman back, a poor woman back, way farther than some other folks. And so this is like a basic social justice issue, aside from the fact that like we're literally telling other people what they can do with their bodies. So I'm like, oh, right now.
I totally agree with you. And one of the focuses of our organization is to work on abortion stigma. Is really the stigmatization of abortion is one of the tools that is used to keep us quiet, not sharing our stories, and separate. And you walk around thinking you're the only one, when in fact, as you said, 1 in 3 American women will have an abortion at some point in her life. Think about it. Most women start menstruating at, what, 12 years old? I mean, we're fertile for upwards of 3 decades. Many women are fertile. That is a long time to manage fertility. When you think about it, to be perfect in your management of your fertility. And the end result is 1 in 3. And you are absolutely right. Campaigns like hashtag Shout Your Abortion give women an opportunity to share stories. And you learn, you know, different people. Some people had no qualms whatsoever. You know, a clear choice, felt nothing but relief. It depends, you know, different women at different points in their lives. There was one day last winter, there was an all-day abortion storytelling event that was web-based. And one woman's story, I'll never forget it, spoke about her own life, saying, you know, in my mid-20s, I was in a relationship with sort of a loser guy, became pregnant, had an abortion You know, I didn't have to think too hard about my decision. I became pregnant subsequently after I was married, had a baby. After that, I found out, you know, I had a health condition and I was advised never to become pregnant again. Became pregnant by mistake and had to make a very painful choice about termination. So it's one woman, 3 different times in her life, 3 different choices and 3 different circumstances. And don't we all deserve the right to invest the meaning that we want to invest in our pregnancies? I think we all have that right.
Yeah, there's it's all steeped in as far as I can tell. Like, I understand that people can differ on, like, moral choices in general, just anything at all. Now, granted, like, I'm a vegetarian, but I don't go around telling other people, you know, that they're shameful and awful and they're murderers. I don't do that. I might be sitting across from someone and at a table and they're eating a hamburger, and there's no part of my brain where I'm like, what I should do now, the best use of my time, is to tell that other person what their moral code should be. Because, well, frankly, I'm not an asshole. But there are a lot of folks who think that that's how you do morality. Yeah. You do morality by making other people feel badly for situations that you've never had to experience. And often, especially in the case of someone who can't be pregnant, will never, ever, under any circumstances, ever face. And so I get real salty about that sort of, like, calling people names and this high horse nonsense for situations they cannot even fathom, a life they can't even fathom. And the reality is that it's all steeped in, there should be consequences for sex. You should be punished for it. You should have to pay the troll toll because it's inherently bad and wrong, and it's only acceptable in certain ways, and sex is only valuable if you do it, you know, on a Tuesday while the candles are lit, you know, just whatever nonsense you've decided are the specific parameters in which I'm allowed to do stuff to myself. You know, I just get real right up right now. So I'm really excited. Yeah. And I don't know, like, how has the narrative changed over the time? Like, you mentioned coming up that, you know, for instance, in the 70s, I bet the messages were quite different than they are now. Can you speak to, like, how, like, the social constructs of discussing this stuff have changed?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting from my perspective. In the 70s, there was not this kind of, well, certainly when you would go to an abortion clinic, there were not people out there screaming at you and hollering at you, and you didn't need to be escorted, and doctors' lives were not in danger. And then Supreme Court decisions have further eroded it with the appointment. I'll never forget working at Planned Parenthood in the early 90s with my two-month-old baby on my lap typing out a press release about Clarence Thomas, you know, going on to the Supreme Court, and it's just been one terrible decision after another. Mm. It seems as though, you know, anti-choice groups have gotten really creative and, you know, plans that they have hatched to further erode our rights, looking at local government as opposed to sort of, you know, as opposed to focusing on the Supreme Court, you know, looking at local and state governments, hacking away at access. That's really what it is. It's decreasing access, whether it's creating laws that make it difficult to run an abortion clinic that were recently passed. For example, abortion clinics have to conform to the same standards as ambulatory care clinics. Hallways have to be so wide, and having to have certain kind of staff people, rules that are just not required for those. That's one type of access issue. Harassing providers is another type of access issue. Harassing patients is another type of access issue. The money issues, the ability to pay for an abortion. So from every angle, folks have been working to decrease access. So for us, Women's Medical Fund, as an abortion access group, we are looking to help people in the here and now. We're looking to educate so that people can come to better understand, you know, that women need access to safe abortion care. And we certainly do advocacy to work to change those laws at various levels. Working with that sort of three-pronged approach, like we like to say, abortion access now and always. We're looking to make it better today for women who need emergency financial help today, and we want to change the laws for the future.
So in terms of our Philadelphia area and the Women's Medical Fund, like, what are the numbers? Like, how many people are being served? Do you have any sense of, like, the kind of impact?
So last year, we provided information, referrals, and support to over 3,300 women on the phone. Over 2,000 women used the financial support that was offered. Sometimes somebody can call, we can come up with, say, oh, we can help you with $75. Not everybody goes through with their decision. People change their minds. And the average amount of assistance we provided was $117. I mean, it can be really hard to imagine that the cash in your wallet could change somebody's life. And if you're short $100, it might as well be $1,000. Mm. Because if you don't have it, you don't have it. So very, you know, small amounts of support make a huge difference. As I said, about 70% of the people who call us already have children that they're looking to raise. People want to care for their families, for sure. People call us from every, you know, the diversity of callers is huge, and everyone's situation is unique. But the common denominator there is that people are struggling to get by. People are dealing with really, you know, extreme poverty.
I think that's also another point that a lot of folks don't grasp. I don't think they understand the degree of economic disparity in this country. I don't think they understand that, like, a person who works a minimum wage job full time is, I mean, they're living in poverty. You can't possibly hope to pay for even a fairly rudimentary apartment on that, much less take care of kids. Like, I find it, you know, challenging to make my student loan payments and also pay for my apartment and also, you know, be able to go out to eat. Like, it's like, I can't even fathom if I didn't have the privilege to go to get higher degrees of education, where I can make more money. Like the situation I would be in if I never had those opportunities. Like, I can't fathom even supporting myself, much less multiple people. I think that's like a really big piece that people are missing. They're like, you know, again, to go back to that, you should be punished for sexual behavior. And that includes like living in poverty, and your kids get to be punished too for that as well.
Absolutely. So for us last year, the average annual income of the people that we helped was $6,700. $6,700. It's just hard to fathom. It's really hard to fathom. So we, you know, work hard to raise money. We hold these special events to raise money so that we can help more women. Our helpline is not open 40 hours a week. So, you know, we turned away 2% of our callers. Sometimes people call and it's like, our pot of money for the week is empty, so you're going to have to call us back next week. Mm-hmm. And that's with our phone lines only being open part of the time. If our phones were open all day, every day, we'd be turning away a lot more people. So we helped a lot of people, but there are many more people. We did a needs assessment and determined that we believe there are thousands of women out there that we're not able to help who haven't called us. We don't do any mm-hmm. advertising. You know, we're turning people away who are referred to us by providers. We can't even help all of those people. So the need is huge. And the reality is it doesn't take, you know, support at every level can make an impact, without a doubt. You know, people can become a monthly supporter and give $10 a month. And guess what? It's $120 a year. It's enough to help one woman. Mm-hmm. So at like, you know, a $10 a month gift that you make over the course of a year can turn someone's life around.
That's a really good dose of perspective, yeah. So if folks are interested, they want to know more about the Women's Medical Fund, they want to know more about even just the One Night Only event, or they want to become supporters, those sort of things, where can they go? Where can they learn more?
We have a website. It's womensmedicalfund.org. We're also on Facebook under Women's Medical Fund. We're on Twitter under Women's Med Fund is our Twitter handle. And you can absolutely get in touch with us through any of those ways. If you find us online, it has our email, our, you know, phone number in the office. It has all the information about One Night Only. We would love to have a big crowd. We'd love to have a big crowd for Liz Winstead to come out and welcome her to Philadelphia. It'll definitely be a fun night out. So please, we would love for people to come out and join us, learn more about abortion access, get involved with some really fun, fierce people who care about these issues. The camaraderie is fantastic.
I'm stoked about these prizes too. There's like pretty legit stuff, including a week at a 4-bedroom lakefront home in gorgeous southern Maine. You could win that,
or a cocktail party for 12 in your home, catered by Peachtree and Ward. That's my, like, prize-giving away voice. And these are pretty great, yeah. And there's, there's booze and dancing. It's all the things that I like doing, plus also supporting stuff that's important to me. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's a great way to spend your night. And the other prize that is we call the signature raffle prize, is a $2,500 merchandise credit to Lux Home.
That
if
is
you've never
cool.
been to a party in a super fancy furniture store, you've got to come see this. We have an awesome photo booth with some really awesome, fierce reproductive justice signage that we then post, you know, all over social media. It's really a lot of fun.
This is cool, yeah. I'm about activism where you also get to party. That's pretty dope. That's a pretty good time.
It's great food, great vodka cocktails. They'll come up with some special, you know, signature drinks for us for the night. It is truly a lot of fun.
I dig it. All right. Well, so much gratitude to Judy Walker, who's the development manager for the Women's Medical Fund. This has been... I'm just so excited that we got to talk to you today before this big event.
Thank you so much for having us or having me rather to talk about us and our work. We're so appreciative.
So now, if you weren't already aware of Women's Medical Fund, you are now, and now you know what you can do with that extra coffee money that's burning a hole in your pocket. You can go change somebody's entire trajectory with it. So true. So now that you know about that, you can go do some serious good in the world. So thank you again to Judy Walker for coming
really
today.
Really appreciate it.
My honor. And thank you for everyone for listening, and have a good day. Hey, friends and family of Sex with Timmery. We are so grateful to have your listenership. We have the coolest fans in the world. It's pretty much the best. And we hope that the love is mutual. If you are interested in supporting the Sex with Timmery media, either the website, the podcast, head on over to patreon.com/sexwithtimmery and become a supporter. For as little as $1 a month, you can be a regular supporter and continue to bring independent media that provides the kind of information that you want to have out in the world. Over here at Sex with Timmery, we have been doing this stuff for years. As you've noticed, we've got over 200 episodes. The Sex with Timmery website has been up since 2008. We've been giving you the goods for absolutely no cost, and we will continue to do so as long as we can. So thank you so much for your listenership, and we do hope that you will check it out. Patreon.com/sexwithtimmery. Thank you for listening to Sex with Timmery. Sex with Timmery, the podcast, is produced by Nathan Karuna. Our opening music is by Charles Evans. Our closing music is by Hanya Lee. Be sure to check out sexwithtimmery.com, Sex with Timmery on Facebook, and tweet at me, Timmery_LEIGH. If you're a fan of the show, if you like it at all, a little bit maybe even, rate and review us on iTunes and tell your friends all about it. And thank you.